Recently, Shauna and I had the enormous pleasure of interviewing the very beautiful former model, singer, and actress, Sybil Shepherd. Thank you, Sybil, for spending some time with us to talk all about moonlighting. You were an absolute delight to talk to and still as beautiful as ever. I think all moonlighting fans would join me in saying, thanks for the moonlighting memories. And a very special thank you to executive producer Glenn Gordon Caron. So please enjoy Sybil's thoughts and memories of moonlighting.
So,
listen, bub, knock that high school locker room grin off your face or I'll knock it off for you. I'm not Miss March, Miss May, or Miss anything else. For your information, I am Ms. Madeline Hayes, and I own this dump.
Welcome to the show, moonlighting fans. Whether you're a moonlighting fan from way back when, or whether you are new to moonlighting and you want to know what all the hype is about, you have come to the right place. Hi, I'm Grace.
And I'm Shauna. And we're your hosts for the podcast that is all about moonlighting. When we talk about moonlighting, we're talking about the Emmy Award-winning 80s TV series starring Bruce Willis and Sybil Shepherd. So if you're a fan of theirs, you're going to want to stay tuned as we review all 66 episodes.
We hope you enjoy this journey with us because we are going to be watching the series episodes one by one and discussing them every week. Now, this is going to take several years, as you can imagine, so please join us because we are going to have so much fun along the way. We will also be releasing bonus episodes of interviews with creators, cast, and crew to extend your listening experience.
That's right, and we really want to include our moonlighting fans in this project as much as possible. So write to us and let us know what your thoughts are and even if you have some trivia to disclose. Our email address is fans@moonlightingthepodcast.com, and we will include you in our future episodes.
So stay with us. Shauna and I are beyond excited to finally bring moonlighting into the 21st century for some serious discussions. You up for it, Shauna?
I sure am.
Well, let's get started.
Well, hello and welcome to another bonus episode of Moonlighting the Podcast. Shauna and I are very excited and thrilled to have today's guest join us. Originally from Memphis, Tennessee, at the age of 16, she won the Miss Teenage Memphis title. Soon she was being cast in various modeling campaigns and became the It Girl on the cover of magazines such as Teen and Glamour. In 1970, director Peter Bogdanovich saw Sybil's image on a Glamour magazine, and this moment sealed her future in the limelight. He cast her in his upcoming movie, The Last Picture Show, which was a major success. She went on to do The Heartbreak Kid, Daisy Miller, at Long Last Love. Then another success, Taxi Driver. In 1983, Sybil was cast in the NBC television drama, The Yellow Rose. And in 1985, she was approached by Glenn Gordon Caron to star as Madeline Hayes in a Hawksian-style comedy called Moonlighting. Since then, she's gone on to do numerous movies such as Chances Are in 1989. Sybil has appeared in many TV shows, but in 1995, Sybil got her own sitcom called Sybil that ran from 1995 to 1998. In the year 2000, she released her autobiography called Sybil Disobedience, which, by the way, Sybil is a great title, which became a bestseller. She appeared in 19 episodes of the series The L Word alongside her daughter Clementine from 2007 to 2009. In 2012, Sybil made her Broadway debut in The Best Man. Most recently, she starred in Being Rose in 2017. And in 2023, she starred in How to Murder Your Husband, the Nancy Brophy story. And she shows no signs of stopping. Please welcome the very beautiful Sybil Shepherd. Thank you for joining us, Sybil.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, Sybil. As I told you before, we've been doing this podcast for 2 or 3 years now, Grace. Yeah. And we've had a lot of guests, but we always said if we didn't have the star of the show, it would never be complete. So we feel so lucky and fortunate that you're with us today. And
I'm very excited.
Wonderful. Well, we will get right to it. Let's start with Moonlighting 2.0 here streaming on Hulu. We gave you a few episodes to watch this week. I'm not sure if you got to them, but if you go to watch Moonlighting these days, are you going to watch it on Hulu or are you still watching it on your DVDs?
I might watch it on Hulu.
So what do you think of the music changes, what it took to get Moonlighting streaming? Because it was a shame that it was not available for so long, but there were a few changes that had to be made in order to get it streaming.
Well, I haven't seen them, so tell me how different they are.
Okay, well, you know what? We have prepared for this moment.
We're very organized, Sybil.
So I put together some clips to show you to kind of get your thoughts on. Okay, let me get to, okay. yeah, there's a whole string of video clips in here. So,
okay, great.
Okay, Sybil, so let's take a minute so you can hear some of the music changes. This is from Money Talks, Natty Walks. I'll show you the original song and then the new music that replaced it, and you can give us your thoughts. And for listeners, you won't hear the music due to copyright laws. You'll just hear a beep. All right, so I don't know, what are your thoughts on the music changes there?
Well, I like both of them, so I'm fine with the changes.
Okay.
I like the original, and I like the change one too.
Yeah, you think it still works?
Yeah, I think it still works.
Okay, that's good. We did a whole podcast on just the music changes, and we do feel like some of them work, some of them don't work, just because, right. Well, because we feel that the lighting and music and moonlighting were really supporting characters, and the songs were chosen specifically for scenes, you know? And yeah, maybe in this one, this clip, you getting ready, you wear it well. The lyrics kind of go along with you getting ready, but you're just getting ready, so that's okay. But another example is This Old Heart of Mine, and Knowing Her was replaced with just more modern songs, like a 2018 song, you know?
Oh, really?
So I think that's our main gripe, is that the songs are very modern. So maybe a different 80s song could have been chosen to kind of capture the feeling at the time. But
that would have been better.
Yeah, that's it.
But it still sounded good to me.
And whatever it took to get it streaming. Right?
Right.
So if that's what it took, that's what it took. So in the end, the music changes are just, it is what it is. And, you know, maybe with time, we will get some of those songs back.
Okay, let's get into Moonlighting. I'm really interested in your working relationship with Robert Turturis. We both love looking at your outfits in every episode when we review each episode. We're actually doing an outfit count. Yeah. And in our Moonlighting episode guidebook, we've got a total of all your outfit changes, as well as the Agnes Rhymes and the door slams. So we've got all the door slams in there as well.
All the door slams.
So
oh, really?
What I want to know is, how was it decided what sort of outfit you were wearing for a particular episode? Did Robert Turturis look at the script and think, oh yeah, we need this sort of outfit, this color? How was it decided what outfit you were wearing in a particular episode?
He just chose them, and they were all so great. He was so brilliant. I never had a problem with them.
So there wasn't any particular reason. He just designed something and picked the color.
He was brilliant. Yeah, he was. It's there's a lot of genius in moonlighting at work.
Definitely, yeah. And he always chose styles to complement your figure.
Yes.
And also in the commentary for Atomic Shakespeare that you did with Bruce and Jay and Glenn, Bruce mentions that you weren't allowed to wear blue on Moonlighting. Do you remember that and what the reason was? Was it Jerry's lighting? Maybe you didn't like the blue?
I don't know why they didn't allow me to wear blue. But the colors looked great on me that were chosen, so I had no complaints.
Oh, absolutely. There was such a variety of colors that you had, white, pink, you know, a lot of pastels.
It seemed like it was more of a pastel color palette, you know, with your office and everything. So maybe a deeper blue would have been too.
It wouldn't have been right for the character, I don't think. Would have been distracting.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
that's true.
There were some outfits that were repeated. Some outfits you wore 4 or 5 different times and some we never saw again. Any reason for that?
Not that I recall. I was so busy doing moonlighting. I remember at one point we get behind a little of the schedule and Glenn would write a scene for us to do in the car. So we'd do half the scene. We'd go out with half the scene and we'd tape it to the dashboard of the car and look at our lines. And that's how we knew our lines, because we just got them.
Yeah.
You got your script light.
Yeah. We just got them and we had to tape them up there and the cameras had to not be facing the dashboard.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So was it kind of a relief when you did car scenes because you could get through pages really quickly and you didn't have to memorize that dialogue?
Well, it was a different kind of pressure, but I'd never minded the pressure because it always seemed to turn out great.
When we interviewed Jay Daniel, he said he thinks the late pages were part of what helped the show because it was really the spontaneity, like you really were hearing yourself say those things and saying
That's
them.
Right.
In the a blessing in disguise, even though sometimes a difficult way to work.
Yeah, but it was worth it.
Of course, when you look back. So along with the outfits, the Maddie Hayes look seemed to change from week to week. We did ask Jay about that, but he said we left that up to Sybil and her makeup team or hair team. So here's an example. This is the beginning of the dream sequence. We're looking at hair and makeup and wondering if you can tell us how you guys decided what the hair and makeup would be. Was there any discussion about how to change it from episode to episode? Because this is dream sequence. And then the next week, this is My Fair David.
Oh my God, the difference is quite extraordinary.
Yeah. And then the next week, this is Knowing Her.
Oh, wow. That's different too.
Yeah. The lighting there, that Jerry Finnerman lighting across your eyes and everything's really great. And then that's Somewhere Under the Rainbow, which we always love it when your hair is flat like this, but sometimes it got really big.
Yeah. I'm very fortunate. I have a lot of hair.
Yeah. So do you remember any discussion about, I mean, this is all within a month's time, right?
Well, I trusted the people that were doing my hair, and it's interesting if you think about to the pilot, how simple my hair is in the pilot. It's much more simple. It gets more complicated as the series progresses. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't bother me.
Why did it get more complicated?
Oh, it just becomes, hair becomes more focused on, and then people want to do more with it.
Were they trying to make it easier in filming? You know, if you made it really curly and hairsprayed it into place.
To maintain it. It's easier to maintain it.
At the time, it was a popular style, but season 5, it seems like you got a perm.
But I didn't get a perm. That's just the way the hair developed. Oh. We were working so fast. There wasn't a lot of time to really think about it. We just had to keep doing it. I wouldn't have stopped the production because my hair was too big or too hairspray.
Right. So you had to maybe just have hair that would last all day.
Well, yeah. But they still had to be worked on.
Yeah, in between.
Yeah.
It's funny because based on Maddie's hair, because it changed so much, we can we can see a picture and we can tell when it was filmed.
Oh, or, really?
Yeah. We know which episode it is when we look at it.
That's amazing. Yeah. So which episode is this one I'm looking at right now?
That's Knowing Her.
Oh, okay. I believe you.
I promise.
It was parted in the middle. And this picture we're looking at now is from My Fair David.
Oh, look at that. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not happy there because you've just seen him do the limbo.
Well, that's what makes it the show so funny is he's so funny and I don't find it funny. So the audience has room to laugh.
Oh, it's hilarious. Yeah.
And Will McKenzie and Bruce Willis did the commentary for My Fair David. And when he saw your picture here, or when he sees you come in the office, Bruce says, ah, she's so cute. Which we love. We love it. It's funny, you and Bruce in the commentary, because we watch the commentary episodes a lot. Mm-hmm. You guys are always commenting on how, you know, good looking each other are when you see each other.
I'm just glad we never consummated the relationship.
Yeah.
Oh, it helped enormously. We came close. We were so attracted to each other. But I think it was Bruce that probably put his foot down about it. He said, maybe we should not do this.
Yeah.
Consummate the relationship. Yeah, that was a very wise decision on his part. And I had to agree with him.
So, yes, in your book, you kind of described that moment where you invited him over to your house and were getting it on, but then decided not to. So
yeah, it was Bruce who said, maybe we shouldn't do this. We might be working together a very long time.
Okay.
And I said, you're right. So we didn't consummate it.
So do you remember, so was that during the pilot episode? Because in your book, you said it was during like a steamy or heated scene. And some people wonder if that's a scene where you were arguing, a heated scene like that, or a heated scene like flipping.
Good question. I'm not sure.
Pretty early on. I mean,
very early on, and then we never consummated it.
Yeah. So probably season 1. I'm just trying to think of a heated scene because you didn't kiss in the show until the dream sequence.
That's
season 2, episode 4. I'm just trying to think of a heated scene. You described it as a heated scene and you walked off set and said, are we going to do something about this or not? Or what? And that's what you said in the book.
No, we're not going to do something about it.
And then he came over.
I think he brought a bottle of Jack Daniels or something.
Yeah. Okay. So you don't quite remember, but early on.
Well, I remember it was a big rocking chair that kind of laid down flat. Like if you get in those rocking chairs and you could stretch them all the way out.
Like a lazy boy.
Like lazy boy, yes. It was a lazy boy rocking chair that could like turn into a bed almost.
And you almost did turn it into a bed.
We almost did, but we caught ourselves in time.
Okay.
It was Bruce who said it, yeah. And I agree with him.
Well, it's probably better to increase the sexual tension on the screen.
Yes. You might have a lot of contempt for someone if you had sex with them.
Yeah. Especially if you didn't.
Or
if it
vice
didn't.
Versa.
Yeah.
You know, they could have it for you.
Yeah.
You kind of have that, and you have to play those things in the scenes anyway.
So you could kind of play it out on camera, but not live that in real life. I mean, yeah, it would be hard if you were on set every day with someone you slept with and then you see them dating other people. And I don't know. I mean, if one of you developed feelings or something.
Well, also, I remember when we finally consummated the relationship, we were supposed to be lying in bed, but we were standing up next to a mattress. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That made everybody's face look better.
Yeah.
Instead of going over like this on a, you know, laying on a mattress.
Yeah. And gravity was working for you. Well, the other reason for the mattress being stood up vertically is that you were pregnant and Bruce had a broken collarbone at the time due to a skiing accident.
Yeah.
So let me show you another clip. Speaking of skiing.
Okay.
All right. You and Bruce at the IBA awards. I don't know if you've seen this. This is kind of new, but see if it rings a bell. But yeah, Bruce says something about you guys going skiing here. Okay, so hold on.
Someone and I were supposed to go skiing too.
There were a number of reasons why we didn't go.
Okay. Do you remember a plan to go skiing with Bruce?
No, I never had a plan to go skiing with Bruce. I don't know what he's making it up. I think he's making it up.
Because he's having a hard time holding that award because his collarbone is broken.
Oh, collarbone, that's right.
Yeah, that's why he couldn't hold the award. But then he said, yeah, there were a number of reasons why we didn't go. So
yeah, right.
To fans, that makes us wonder, A, if you had a plan to go skiing at some point, which sounds like no.
No.
That sounds like he was just trying to be funny then.
He was trying to be funny. He was funny.
Yeah.
So how much time outside the show did you and Bruce ever spend together?
Well, there wasn't much time to spend together because the hours were very long on the show. And so we didn't really have time to do anything else much.
So this is a picture of you and Bruce Willis and a very young Clementine.
Oh my God, look at that. That's Clementine.
And I've talked to Clementine on social media before. She said this was a surprise birthday party for you.
Oh yes, for me, that's right. And I'm in blue.
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe that's because they let me wear blue because it was a surprise birthday party.
Yeah. So was this a party that the show threw for you somewhere?
I'm not sure.
So the second picture, Sybil, is from your book. It's a picture of your second husband, Bruce Oppenheim, Bruce Willis, and you. And it looks like the three of you have all of the ingredients to make margaritas.
We're VHS. In a trailer. We're in a like a bus for makeup and, you know, a bus for your dressing room.
Oh, okay. So this is on set.
On set? No, it isn't.
No, I mean, this is a trailer for hair and makeup.
A trailer on set. That's what I mean,
a trailer on set. Ah, okay, great. Well, we've been wondering for a while where that picture was taken. So it's great to get an answer to that. One of the trailers on the set. Excellent, thanks. A typical day for you on Moonlighting. It sounds like you would get there very early and you're more of a morning person to learn your lines and shoot your side first, right?
Yes. Well, I had the seniority.
Okay.
So I got shoot my coverage first, yes. Not all the time.
We sometimes wondered if you were more of a morning person and filmed your side first and then you could go home because you were a single mother at the time, so you probably wanted to get home to Clementine at some point, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So when you and Bruce were getting ready for a scene, say, you'd be handed your pages. Can you walk us through, say with the overlapping dialogue, how you work together to block that scene and rehearse it before filming? And do you and Bruce work together to help memorize your lines? Or do you memorize separately and then come together and do the scene?
I remember memorizing the lines separately and then coming together. Okay. And I remember when I had a lot of lines to learn, both of us did. Sometimes I would fall asleep during that episode that I was supposed to be learning the lines just for about 6 minutes. Then when I would wake up, I was ready to learn more lines. So,
oh, okay.
6 minute nap and wake up.
I don't blame you. Did you find it difficult to learn the lines or did you just get really used to it?
you get really used to it, but it's still, it's a challenge, but it was such a wonderful challenge. Okay. Scripts were so well done and the music was great. The director was great. The director of photography was great. Everybody on the set was wonderful.
That's how we always feel. It's like from the writing to the lighting to the costuming.
To the writing, to the lighting,
to the costuming, to the acting, and just how everybody pulled off their jobs so well. You know, it really was lightning in a bottle.
It was.
Yeah. We're curious about the overlapping dialogue, your timing, the amazing timing that you both had. You say you practice separately, but with the overlapping dialogue, surely you would have had to do that together so you get the timing right and finish at the right time?
Well, we'd have to do it together. When I was with Peter Bogdanovich for 8 years of my life, we lived together and I saw every great film ever made. Mm-hmm. And one of the best films ever made is His Girl Friday. It had been made twice before with two reporters, and they had two men playing the reporters, and then they decided to put a woman and a man together, Cary Grant and Rosalind Russell. So I had seen that. I had studied that. And as far as the overlapping dialogue went, we just fell into it. It just worked for us. It was great dialogue. We both had a great investment in making it come across, be funny or touching or whatever it was supposed to be. Sometimes confusing.
The plots.
The plots, sometimes confusing.
Sometimes when the episode was almost finished filming, they'd figure out who was actually the murderer and ask them to come back. So
right.
Because you filmed Moonlighting like a movie, like single camera,
yeah,
you would film, say, your side and then hours later film Bruce's side or vice versa.
Yeah.
I guess hours later, you have to remember where you crossed with that overlapping dialogue.
Yeah. Well, that's also the script supervisor's job is to keep track of all the actions like that, so that we can match them. And we had very good script supervisors as well, because they'll tell you where you went at a certain time in the scene, so you can match it.
Are you someone who wants to know everything about everything? Are you constantly searching on your phone while you watch TV to find out more? Moonlighting, an episode guide, gives you the inside scoop on each episode and goes into detail about everything Moonlighting. Would you like to know more about the actors, cultural references, music, and more? This guide will be a constant companion while you're sitting down watching Moonlighting.
I need to make sure I get their book.
How many door slams were there? Well, you have to buy the book to find out.
I'll have to make sure I get it.
Even Sybil herself can't wait to get a copy.
Well, I can't wait to read it.
Go to tuckerdspress.com or amazon.com to get your copy of Moonlighting, an episode guide.
I can't wait to get it.
Yeah, sometimes we can almost see one of you kind of slowing down or, you know, and knowing that you have to meet a certain point, yeah. And by the end of season two, into season three, you guys seemed to get really good at it. It just seemed really seamless. You make it look so easy. I know it wasn't. So basically, you come in the morning, you get your lines, then you block the scene out of character, right? Not in hair and makeup. You block the scene together. And then you go away, memorize your lines, get in hair and makeup, come back together, do the scene.
Yes. Sometimes we'd rehearse, you know, we'd have a rehearsal before we did the scene and hair and makeup too. It just depended on the, you know, the scene that we were doing.
I mean, you worked with a lot of the same directors on Moonlighting, but some only came in for an episode or two. And some directors, I think you guys liked better than others. So if a director came in and you guys didn't really like him, what were they doing that didn't work for you?
Well, directing the two of us, you're directing two different people. We're very different in many ways. And you have to kind of use your direction in a way that suits the people you're directing. So we were lucky that way. Most of the directors were very good.
Some of them, like Alan Arkush or Peter Werner.
Yeah.
They did so many episodes, I guess they really got to know you and Bruce and your different styles.
Yes. And that would make it a lot easier for us to do it with directors that we knew like that.
Alan Arkush was saying that you and Bruce would have different ideas about the scene and you would both tell him your ideas. And then you did not like it when he would say, let's try it both ways. You guys wanted him to like decide which way to do it, which way was better.
So. Yeah. Well, that helps if a director makes their preference known, because then it just, you can give them more what they want, and then they're open for other things. Once you give them what they want, then maybe they're open to something else that Bruce or I might like.
Yeah, that collaboration of ideas just sounds like a lot of the great spontaneity of the show came out of trying it different ways like that. Yeah. In the commentary episode, two different times you start a story, but you never finish the story. And both times you get interrupted. So let's see if we can finish the story today.
Okay.
So you start talking about how in one of the scenes, I think it was an episode in season one, but I'm not sure. Chris Howell, the stunt coordinator, you guys had to throw a gun at Bruce's head. And then you said,
no, Bruce, the stunt coordinator was going to throw a gun at Bruce's head. So he peeks out on like the top of a roof, a roof door. And he peeks out. And then I told the director, I told the stunt coordinator, I said, "Why? It's just a rubber gun. Why don't you hit him in the head with it?" So he did. But Bruce didn't get hurt or anything.
That was the next murder you hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's season one. We call season one, it's the six episodes. I don't know if that's how you guys refer to it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
That was six episodes. The radio DJ.
And then the next season, how many episodes did we do?
Season two, you guys did 18.
Oh, I mean, I wonder how many it was in season three.
Season three, you did 15.
Oh, interesting. When did we do the black and white episode?
Season two.
That sequel. Took longer to do because it was more complicated in terms of the lighting.
Okay.
I think that's the one that Orson Welles introduced.
Yeah.
He was a house guest. He lived at the house that Peter and I lived at for about 3 years, a little over 3 years.
That's amazing. I know. And it's one of the last things he did on film.
Yes. And then he also, one night, he put a lit cigar in his robe pocket about to get into the shower. And it started a little fire and I smelled it. I was upstairs. Peter wasn't in the house. Mm-hmm. And I came downstairs and I knocked on the door. I said, "Is everything okay in there?" And Orson said, "Yes, it's taken care of."
Ooh.
And so he managed to get it out and not start the house on fire.
Oh my gosh.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, dangerous. Once Orson yelled at me. He yelled at me, "Everything you've ever learned is balls. Balls, do you hear? Balls." And the next morning he volunteered to make breakfast for me. So I wasn't mad at him.
So what does that mean? Everything balls. You've ever learned is ridiculous?
Is nothing. Is
that
Everything you've ever learned is ridiculous. Is nothing.
Okay. Okay. That's really funny. Yeah. I mean, Sybil, you've lived a life. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Hated Elvis. Orson Welles is a house guest of yours.
With one of my musical directors, Tom Adams, I wrote a beautiful song called Graceland Revisited, which in my new one-woman show, I'll be performing that.
Great.
It's very moving. I have to learn how to sing the song without crying.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, because the best way to move your audience to tears is not necessarily for you to cry. Sometimes it's better that you're not crying. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, bring it out in them, kind of relay the emotion in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe the physical comedy, while we're talking about the stunt coordinator, the physical comedy of the show, you got a pie in the face, you got paint poured on you.
I asked for that pie.
Yeah.
We spent seems like 22 hours doing a food fight. And then near the end, I said, "Look, Bruce doesn't have to get the pie in the face, but I'd like the pie in my face. Because the way they make the pies that they're going to throw into your face, they're not going to hurt your face."
Mm-hmm.
It just has whipped cream and pie crust.
Okay.
So no fun. Somebody said, "Who's going to throw the pie at Bruce?" I said, "Whoever he wants to throw the pie."
And who was it?
I don't remember who it was, but somebody did throw, both of us got pies in the face.
I think it was maybe Chris Howell, maybe the stunt coordinator.
Chris Howell, yeah. I don't know who threw the pie at me.
He had a good aim. He hit you both right in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a hilarious scene. Well, I've often wondered, did they have to have a few goes? Because you can't get that wrong. You would have had to go and clean up and start again.
No, we only had to do it once.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah, because you don't have time to redo it.
No.
Take all the stuff off your face and redo your makeup. That would be impossible.
Yeah, after 22 hours, that would be a lot to start again. Yeah, so a lot of physical comedy, you know, directors like Alan Arkush and Dennis Dugan said that you were game for anything, that you were up for drenching you in champagne or paint. Or how was that day? We never hear much about that. Was paint poured on you as satisfying as a pie in the face?
No, pie in the face is better.
Okay.
Easier to clean up after. I'll take a pie in the face any day over paint.
I bet. Yeah, so the paint day, that had to be a one take thing as well. I mean, you're not going to clean up on that. So, and then, or say like knowing her, you had to kind of be dirty and wet and things like that, or being tied up for Atomic Shakespeare or in Portrait of Maddie or the pilot.
I never liked to be tied up. I always like to be fake tied up. I think during the pilot, when we're tied up, I'm really tied up because the way the chair moves with me when I'm trying to get him to untie me. He unties himself and then he's taking his time getting around to untying me.
Because we only see you tied up on screen for 5 minutes or something, but you're probably tied up to that chair as long as it takes to film. Is that why you didn't like being tied up?
Yeah, I don't like being tied up too much. I'd rather it be fake. If it's real, it's a little scary.
Well, in Atomic Shakespeare, were you really tied up on the altar or was that a fake tie up?
Well, they always kind of fake tied me up because I didn't like to ever be really tied up. But I had a gag in my mouth too, I believe.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't fun. I don't advise having a party.
No.
Or having to wear a gag in your mouth.
No, for hours. Because again, we're only seeing it for the short scene.
Right.
Which episode do you remember being the hardest to film?
Well, the food fight was pretty hard to do.
We heard that was a very long day in the ballroom.
Yeah, that was we had to change filming crews because their time went over and they had to leave and we had to get a fresh crew.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
What about learning the iambic pentameter for Atomic? It sounds like you had a really short window to learn that.
I don't know how I did it. I don't know. I couldn't do it today, I can tell you that. I don't know how I did it. Just didn't ask myself, can I do it?
Yeah, just to kind of prove that you could, right?
Yeah.
Because we interviewed Ron and Jeff, the writers for that episode, a couple weeks ago, and they said they were writing it like as you were filming, like just ahead of the camera.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Maybe I can show you a scene from Atomic Shakespeare.
I'd love that.
So this scene we always talk about.
Pay me the shrew.
And if that be the master bedroom, then I shall sleep there.
In there? Au contraire. Be I not the man and you the woman? Be this not the time that men are men and women are property?
Property, you call me. But tryest to plow this acre, and thy blade may get broken.
I shall be the master of what I own.
Good wife, I am in name only, good husband. And thus it is the moon, and tis the moon, no matter what thee said.
Tis the sun, or no sleep for thee.
Tis the moon, and to bed I'm away.
The sun.
The moon.
The sun.
The moon!
Bang, zoom. I will be the king in this my castle. King, king,
some king.
King.
And not even a master to command in this castle.
Instead,
well,
I
tis the moon
choose
I choose to sleep.
Lesson.
And a man
Best.
I choose
on
to sleep.
On your honeymoon night, you will sleep in there without me
I, so
until
you
I say otherwise. Understand it?
Fine.
That's the best. I just love that scene.
That we're at the epitome of anger at each other.
Yeah, I mean, Sybil, that overlapping dialogue in iambic pentameter. I mean, that scene amazes me when I see you guys pull off just mirroring what's happening in the office, but now you're doing it in Shakespearean.
Yes, Shakespearean garb.
I know.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, all the cast have spoken in iambic pentameter in Atomic Shakespeare. It made it look so easy, but I don't
But it wasn't.
But to learn those lines, it's just amazing. Well done. Fabulous. And hilarious at the same time. So you will learn the line, say iambic pentameter, and be comedic and have the timing, and the dynamic between you both was amazing.
It really was. It really was.
Now, around the time that you filmed Atomic also, so right before this, you guys filmed Big Man on Mulberry Street, which was a huge episode. And then you filmed All Creatures, and then you filmed Atomic, and not necessarily in that order because they ran out of order. I mean, what a huge year that season three was, all of those really big episodes back to back.
Yeah, it really was. It was great fun. It was very hard work, but it was, couldn't have been better. You know, beautifully shot, wonderfully directed, really brilliant. And also everybody in this show is so good. All the actors are.
Did you have a lot of fun doing Dream Sequence? It just seemed like you were both, I felt that you were in your element, especially on stage singing those beautiful songs. You looked gorgeous, yeah. Beautiful outfits. Did you have fun doing it, even though I'm sure it was hard work?
Oh, I loved doing it, yes. It was great fun to do it. Great songs. I told you I love you now. I forget who gave me the idea to sing that.
I think Glenn said that you chose the music. You chose the songs. Oh. Or you chose one. I think you wanted to sing I Told You I Love You Now Get Out. And then the other one was Blue Moon, which works for the show. Yeah. For obvious right. reasons. I think in a commentary episode, Glenn said that you chose that.
Oh, cool.
It was all you,
good,
Sybil.
Good on me.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
And
Every once in a while, I do something right.
Yeah. And on Hulu, anything that you guys sang was not changed. I don't know if you knew that. It was just background.
No, I didn't know that. Oh, I'm so glad. That's thrilling to hear.
If you guys sang it or said it or whistled it or something like that, or Bruce played it on the harmonica, it was not changed. So that's great.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, so let me show you a clip from this Good Morning America. I think you might have seen this before, but maybe not. You can tell us.
Oh.
So it's kind of a fly on the wall look at you and Bruce just interacting before an interview with Good Morning America.
Okay.
So we're just kind of wondering, is this like a typical interaction for you and Bruce? Because we hear a lot about your relationship. So we want to hear more about how you guys got along behind the scenes.
Okay.
We have to be here all day, so.
Are we talking to David or who? Are we talking to David? David,
whoever gets
you
set up. Oh, that's in the scene.
You're talking to me. Hello, David? Hi, David.
Okay.
Oh, should I play with my antenna? This thing here? Is that what you said? Wiggle it? This is a little thin for me. I don't mind the length, but.
Is that going on TV?
No, I'm just talking to David Harmon. He can hear me though.
All right. So for any listeners who haven't seen the 30-minute video of Sybil and Bruce waiting to have this interview with Good Morning America in 1986, that's on our YouTube channel, Moonlighting the Podcast. Obviously, we've just shown Sybil a few clips from that interview, but you can see more of what we've shown her there. Okay, so two things that we find interesting watching this, just fly on the wall, just watching you guys kind of just be Sybil and Bruce talking, which we never really get to see, is
right.
It's like role reversal from your characters on the show in a way, because you're being like kind of cheeky and silly and funny, and he's like, oh, Sybil, tisk, tisk, you know? Outside of Maddie and David, we think of you as him as still like a David Addison. So is that typical?
Role reversals. Reversals are always fun. And they're enlightening. You learn things by doing them.
When we first see you guys and you're just talking about your lives, you know, and holding hands and things like that. And this is during Every Daughter's Father is a Virgin, because you're in the costuming for the show. You were filming at a hotel this day and you did this interview in the morning and then you filmed with Eva Marie Saint and Robert Weber later. But you guys look very cordial. You look very warm towards each other and just like supportive of each other's careers. I don't know. I mean, it's just a clip that we're seeing. But would you say this is typical of your relationship? Because we hear a lot about how you guys did not get along.
Right.
I mean, in Curtis Armstrong's book, he says you guys hated each other and weren't talking like that. I don't know. But, you know, we just hear so many things. But when we see this, we go, wait a second. This looks so warm, and this is pretty far into Moonlighting.
Yes, it is. I would say it was a combination of pretty much everything you could experience, you know, and it was, it changed based on subject. We were both so fortunate to have this opportunity to do this show and to be able to do it in And then to kind of have role reversals is a fun thing to do too. For me to be the person that needs to be, have Bruce reassure me is pretty cool.
Yeah, because Alan Arkush tells another story where you guys were filming on location, and that's when the show was at the height of popularity and a huge crowd formed and someone messed up your scene. They yelled while you guys were filming a scene and you had to stop, and you went to flip them off and Bruce stopped you and said, do you really want that on the cover of People magazine?
I appreciate him telling me that. I needed somebody to tell me that at that moment.
I guess if we just had to guess, we would guess that Bruce would be the one flipping him off and you'd be like, Bruce, don't do that.
Reversals. Yeah.
I guess both you and Bruce described your relationship like a marriage, and a marriage has, like you said, every element to it. Sometimes you love each other. Sometimes you hate each other. There's a lot of ups and downs. And you've said, well, let me show you another clip, Sybil. Okay.
Okay. Oh my.
Willis and Sybil Shepherd won for Best Actor and Actress in a TV Comedy for ABC's Moonlighting and put to rest rumors about trouble on the set.
Let me answer that question right now, pal. There's no trouble on the set. There is no trouble on the set.
Well, we have a very volatile relationship. There is a hate-love element to it, and there are times I find that when we have the biggest fights or when we have to fight in the scene, it took me about 8 months to realize we would have a fight whenever we were supposed to be fighting in the scene. I went, oh, that's why.
Was that spontaneous, kissing there in front of the, or did you guys plan that ahead of time? If they ask us about trouble on the set, we'll show them.
No, we didn't. We didn't plan it. It was spontaneous.
Would you describe you and Bruce's relationship during the moonlighting days? Was there more love than hate?
Depended on the day, depended on the scene, depended on what we were going through at the time. Yeah.
You had your fight.
Yeah, sure. Well, we were fighting anyway on this, you know, and on camera. So we had to fight some off camera to get the mood to be on camera.
So what about the scenes that were more sensitive? Does that mean it kind of works that way in reverse as well? You're kind of more sensitive towards each other when you have to do a scene?
They're more like sympathetic scenes, yes, where we're not so angry at each other. Yeah, we had a lot of those too. That's what makes Moonlighting, one of the things that makes it so great is the variety of the kind of acting and the kind of scenes we were playing and how we would have role reversals in that as well.
Things that we would think about the character, like Maddie being an atheist and David being religious.
Right.
So how did you feel about some of these plots? I think you said in your book you weren't too happy about Maddie being an atheist.
Oh, well, I didn't mind her being an atheist. I'm not an atheist, but it's okay to play one.
I think for a show in the 80s, Maddie Hayes was, yeah, just a very forward, not forward thinking, but she was a very progressive woman, right? Because she owned her own agency and she was the boss, and she had to go up against this really fiery partner.
Well, I mean, we had to play so many different things in so many different ways. And it was a great opportunity for an actor to do that. Actor and actress. And I will always have a warm place in my heart for Bruce Willis. He'll always be one of my favorite people. There was a roast of Bruce Willis and I was at the roast. So that was fun to do that. And I got a lighter from it that says Bruce Willis roast. And he wrote me a thank you note and he left one of the L's off my name.
Wow, so I no.
But I've forgiven him.
Was that the last time you saw him?
Yes.
Yeah, terrible what's happened now. I mean, the dementias seem to progress very quickly, which is really terrible for his age and his family.
It's terrible for everyone because the loss is huge. It's a huge loss for everyone. All the audiences, the family, the families, and, you know, you miss him and you want him to be as good as he can be and that sort of thing.
He should be in the prime of his life right now. He's only 68. He should be, you know, he has two little daughters and rumor his oldest daughter just had a grandbaby and.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a shame. Makes us so sad. And doing this podcast, we see Bruce in his prime all the time. So it's so hard to wrap your mind around what's happening with him today.
Yes. Yeah.
So Grace, do you have enough moonlighting in your life?
Shauna, I never have enough moonlighting in my life. You know that.
Yeah, that's true. I did know that, but you know, it's kind of a rhetorical question. You know, after we do these episodes, sometimes I like to get online and chat about moonlighting a little bit more. You know where you can do that?
Shall we tell the fans where?
I think we should share where they can come discuss more moonlighting with us directly.
Well, first of all, they can join us on our Facebook group, which is called Fans of the Moonlighting Podcast.
And they can also search Moonlighting the Podcast on Instagram, on X, formerly known as Twitter, and YouTube. See you there. Going back to plots of moonlighting, we built this great bromance throughout Moonlighting. And then season four, you and Bruce had to be apart for obvious reasons. You were having your twins and had to be on bed rest and all of that, which is totally understandable. But when you came back, and we've asked Glenn about this, we've talked to Glenn about this, we've talked to Ron and Jeff about this choice to have Maddie come back and be married and tell David that the baby wasn't his.
Yes.
So it seemed like in season four, I mean, the wheels were falling off the bus a little bit because, like I said, this great romance that we've built throughout the series. Now, maybe Maddie coming back with a fiance or something isn't so permanent. But anyway, I think that you said that you fought against that storyline, and Ron and Jeff are really against that storyline. One of them almost getting fired over it. Do you remember at all? I know this is 40 years ago and it's just a plot within the show, but do you remember fighting against that story with Maddie marrying someone who wasn't David?
Yes, I remember that, but I didn't get my way.
So you asked Glenn not to go that direction.
Well, I didn't ask Glenn not to go that direction. I just did what he said to do, but I had feelings about it, definitely. Feelings against it.
Yeah, to me, it was a turning point in the show that was hard to come back from because the David character, we were very sympathetic towards him because he was missing Maddie so much when she was gone. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, the audience was so excited about you being back. And then suddenly you're married to somebody else and telling David that the baby wasn't his, which was really never resolved. I mean, that whole storyline and then Maddie losing the baby and all of that. And when none of that was really necessary anyway, because you already had the babies by the time you came back.
Yes.
Season four and into season five is when things took a turn a little bit. But any thoughts about like where Maddie and David should have ended up at the end of the series because you guys did not end up together?
Yeah, we should have ended up together. Definitely. I think so.
Yeah, I always felt like that was kind of the promise of the show that Maddie and David would end up together. I mean, well, we asked Glenn that same question.
And what did he say?
He said, why build a great romance if they're not going to end up together in the end? And that he saw them ending up together in the end. Mm-hmm. But of course, he wasn't there season five.
That's right. I remember that now. Thank you for reminding me. I missed him.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I did.
I mean, the great writing, but the show was run a bit chaotically with him there, right? I mean,
yeah, that's true.
He had to leave because a lot of the things that were going on between the two of you at the time.
Right.
But now, do you think that caused any kind of rift between you and Bruce? Because it was kind of like Glenn, Bruce, and Sybil, right? And Glenn and Bruce were very close. Was there a dynamic there that kind of made it difficult to work?
Yeah, I think it did. It made it difficult to work, I would say.
Was it because your ideas weren't being heard, or was it more because of the way the show was being run?
Glenn was off the show.
Yeah.
So that was a great loss. I don't even remember why he left the show. Do you remember why?
From what we've heard, and some of it you wrote in your book, but talking to some other people about what happened at the time is that you and Glenn, especially around this time of like Big Man on Mulberry Street, Atomic Shakespeare, like in the middle of season three, there was just a lot of infighting between you and Glenn. And he said something to you that really upset you during the filming of Big Man on Mulberry Street. And then like lawyers had to get involved, meetings happening. I think it came down to either you were going to leave or they were going to have to get rid of Glenn because you guys just couldn't work together anymore.
Wow. Well, we made it through it.
When we listened to the commentaries, which was like the 20-year anniversary, you guys sound great together. The conversation flows and it seems like you were all great friends again. I think what we hear from the commentary is that the difficult times were forgotten, that time heals all wounds, I guess. I mean, it sounded like you're all getting along well and you're having a good time talking about the old days. So did you find that the relationship between you and Bruce and Glenn had healed somehow over the years?
Yeah, I think we had a great relationship during when we were doing the commentary. We all got along very well because we weren't having to work together. So
maybe better because you could look at the great work that you'd done and be proud of that, you know? Mm-hmm. So When you guys were doing the commentary episode, Bruce mentioned that you and he should do the commentary for season 5 episode, I See England, I See France, I See Maddie's Netherworld. This is an episode that Bruce talked about a lot. He thought was really funny. One of the funniest episodes, in the later seasons. Mm-hmm. So why didn't you and Bruce ever do a commentary episode together? Just the two of you?
I don't know why we should have. Why not? We should have.
Because Atomic Shakespeare is the only episode that you were on together where we could hear you guys talking together, but it would have been nice just the two of you.
Yeah, it would have been nice. Too bad we didn't get to do that.
We're so happy that we've got those commentaries anyway. You know, the ones we've got, we just feel blessed that we can just go and refer to them and listen to all the cast and crew talk about Moonlighting.
Oh, yeah.
It just gives us so much more insight. And Bruce talks on a lot of the commentaries and we get to hear all of his thoughts and memories. And we're really grateful that we have those commentary episodes. Is there an episode that you would have wanted to do? Well, like if you could have chosen an episode to do with Bruce, which episode would you have chosen to do commentary for?
Any of them. I don't have a particular one. Do you have any ideas?
We were saying like maybe Witness for the Execution, where it was your guys' first kiss in the show, first real kiss that wasn't in a dream.
Yeah, that's true. I agree with that.
That could have been good. That could have been fun.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite episode at all?
Well, I love the Shakespeare episode.
Yeah. I think that is like a fan favorite.
Does a scene come to mind that you found quite difficult to film?
Having to crawl up on that clock and get on the top of that clock.
Yeah.
I was terrified. My makeup artist wouldn't even come up to the top of the building.
Really?
No, my makeup artist was there. No, it was the hairdresser wouldn't come up from the first floor of the building.
Wow.
So I was screaming at the director of photography. This was on the pilot. I was grabbing the back of his leather jacket, screaming, I can't do this. I can't do this. And he had headphones on and he took one off his head and turned around and said, I'm sorry, but I can't hear what you're saying. Put it back on. So I forgot that and I climbed out on that clock. I don't know how I did it. It was like 2 stories above the top of the roof of that building.
You would have had to have a lot of trust in the crew.
Yeah, that's correct. And we were moving a little in the wind. There's a little bit of a platform for us to crawl, for me to crawl off and onto the clock. And it was moving this ever so slightly a little in the wind, which is a little disconcerting. There were also a camera like over the edge of the building to show the side of the building and stuff like that. There were cameras, all over the place.
To capture all the angles. Were you strapped in up there?
I just had scaffolding and then I climbed on that clock. It was terrifying, that clock hand. I don't know how I did it.
Yeah, we don't know how you did it either. Because when we interviewed Jay Daniel, I told him, I said, I still get anxiety when I watch that scene.
Yes, I do too. I got anxiety when I was doing it.
I bet. But you did it. You did it, you know.
And well done.
Thank you.
Turned out great. Let's see. I'll show you this clip. It's just a question about like acting techniques and just how you use your eyes. There's a lot between the eyes in these clips I'm going to show you. You can just give your thoughts as an actor. Is this a technique you use or what?
Great.
Have a nice summer. If you want to say something, now's the time to say it. If you want to talk, talk. Come on, David. Speak now, forever hold your peace.
Too bad he couldn't afford a wedding ring.
Excuse me.
Hey, I'm sorry. Sometimes my mouth gets ahead of my brain. It's just that I think a beautiful woman like you deserves the best.
I have to go. I'm sorry, all the things I did, all the things I said. I never had a man put on a dress for me before.
And you say you've been around.
Yeah. So, I don't know, Sybil, just the use of your eyes in an apology scene and a scene where you're sad, shy. Is this a technique that you use as an actress?
It's a technique that we always try to use as actors. The ability to be moved yourself enough to move the audience, to get the audience involved in your emotions and the other character involved in your emotions. So it's something as actors, it's a challenge we all have.
It's very effective.
Yeah, especially this one, this back and forth. And again, it's filmed hours apart, right? And you have to capture that same kind of emotion, like the glimmer of a tear.
Right.
This is I Am Curious Maddie, the episode where you guys slept together. But you're trying to get David to tell you how he really feels about you. And he won't say anything, which is very frustrating.
Right.
But there's so much in the eyes there.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a great scene.
Thank you.
Yeah, great acting and filmed hours apart, but you have to capture that same emotion.
Well, you get used to that.
Do you?
Yeah, that's just something you have to do as an actor. If you're doing Broadway, you get to do it, you know, you do the scene just once. I did The Best Man on Broadway. I replaced Candace Bergen. I didn't have to be mic'd because I was trained as a, I had a voice teacher starting. I still have the same voice teacher starting when I was, Eileen Brennan on The Last Picture Show suggested I use Joni Zajac, and I've used her as my voice teacher ever since.
Wow.
So I can project. Yeah.
That's great.
Yes, you have a very strong voice. How important in season 5, Dennis Dugan came in and he was playing Walter. So you were actually acting in scenes with him. And then he got behind the camera after Walter had to quickly be
booted out.
Yeah. Walter had to quickly depart the show because the audience was so unhappy with that storyline. So they annulled it. But then Dennis went behind the camera and he directed a lot of episodes in season 5. He seemed like a director that had as equal affection for you and Bruce. Bruce said that Dennis was there reminding you guys of the legacy of the show. So I think there was probably some fatigue and the show had had its heyday and the ratings weren't as high anymore and things like that. But do you remember working with Dennis and how important was he during season 5 on camera and behind the camera?
He was crucial in front of the camera and behind the camera. He did a fantastic job as a director.
Yeah. Did you feel really comfortable working with him since?
Very much.
Yeah. Kind of played your husband and he just seemed like he just really liked you and Bruce just equally and seemed like the perfect person to be directing those season 5 episodes, I think.
A lot of the directors mentioned that you like to be filmed camera left.
Yes.
So how did that come about? Can you explain the story behind that, the history of how you learnt all about cameras and so forth?
Well, I was a model first and the photographers always seemed to favor me with slightly lit camera left. The covers of Peter Bogdanovich, when he cast me in The Last Picture Show, he had seen in a supermarket, in a grocery store, he'd seen the cover of Glamour magazine. And that's when he decided I was the right person to play the part in The Last Picture Show. But I was looking camera left. And I didn't have to argue with Gerald Perry Finneman, the director of photography, about that, because he saw that that was a better angle for me.
Jerry was invaluable to moonlighting. I mean, the little touches that we see that he put into moonlighting, he was really amazing. And he lit you great and Bruce great. Like we say, you know, from writing to lighting, it was all very important, but he just took a lot of care with you.
Yes,
with
he did. Story.
We miss him. We wish we could talk to him.
I know he's no longer with us, but his spirit lives on in the show.
Absolutely.
So he's not lost.
And because you spent so much time with Peter watching films and you knew best how you liked to be filmed camera left, but also many directors mentioned that you knew a lot about cameras, angles, lenses, and things like that. And then in Curtis's book, he said that Bruce also always trying to guess what lens they were using on him and things like that. Do you think that started with you, with the knowledge that you brought in and what you learned from Peter and all of that knowledge of cameras and angles and things?
I don't know if I brought it in. I brought it in for myself on that, but I didn't have to teach anything to Gerald Perry Finneman. He really knew what he was doing in photographing us all.
Yeah, that's true. Just with directors and things like that, sometimes they wanted to put the camera low and you were like, no, that's going to go like straight up my nose or something like that.
My nose. Yeah, right.
Even in that Good Morning America interview, you asked the lady to like raise her camera, you know?
Yes.
And I mean, fair enough. You know, you're the one being filmed, right? You want to look as good as you possibly can.
I want to look people to recognize me.
It'd be hard to make you look bad, Sybil.
Oh, well, thank you for saying that.
You're gorgeous. And
I just lucked out.
Yeah, but you have to maintain that beauty as well. You know, I mean, some people don't do it as well as others.
Well, I had a lot of great support. My dad taught me how to play football in the front yard starting from a very early age. It was a very useful skill.
Really?
Because I remember, yeah, the first time that I went up for a movie part, I think it was or something for who had done, and he had some pages in his hand, and he was getting down on the floor, and he said, "Let's rehearse the love scenes." And I was standing up, and I crossed my arms, and I said, "I don't think so." And then as soon as my agent came back, I said, "Don't you ever leave me like that alone." So from then on, I had people with me when I met with people, possibility of doing, you know, acting roles.
Oh my gosh.
When I met with Peter, though, Peter Bogdanovich, he was alone, but he was very respectful.
Well, good. Then you could have respect for him.
Yes.
That reminds me of something that we need cleared up as well, because when you and Bruce did the commentary for Atomic Shakespeare, you did not agree about whether you always really kissed when you were doing a scene. Bruce thought you always really kissed and you said no. So what?
I was just being perverse.
You were?
I have that side of myself.
So you guys always really kissed?
I think we kissed. We I think we kissed a lot. And then sometimes maybe it wasn't quite a kiss.
If there were too many takes, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, because we just find that a lot of kisses on Moonlighting are hidden for some reason. Like you're kissing, but you hide it.
With my hand there or with the lighting.
Right. Yep.
Well, that makes the kiss more interesting, I think.
It leaves it up to the fans' imagination. That's what it does.
That's what it does. You're right.
So how do you feel about the show now being off the air for almost 40 years and it's still being talked about?
I'm thrilled. I couldn't be happier.
And now it's in the 21st century. It's on Hulu. It's all being talked about.
You know, what could be better?
Books are being written. This is the episode guidebook. Our book goes episode by episode. And
then I'll be ready to do this interview. I'll read your book and then I'm ready to do it again.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, we would love, I mean, Sybil, we'd love to have you back anytime.
Okay, we'll do it.
In the episode guide, you liked to wear sneakers. And sometimes we see the show. And we point those out to people, you know, just fun little like inside scoop that people wouldn't notice like first time watching it and things like that. So,
okay.
There's a lot of fun stuff in there, just behind the scenes stuff and inside scoop.
Oh, cool. So. I can't wait to read it. I'm sorry I didn't get it before this.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah. Watch an episode of Moonlighting and look at the chapter and.
I can't wait.
Maybe you can tell us some things that we missed. Tell us some more inside
okay,
scoop.
Yeah, I will. We'll do it again.
Oh yeah. That would be amazing. Anything else, Sybil, you want to add or tell us today about Moonlighting, that anything that we haven't asked that you have been dying to say all these years?
How lucky am I? I am one of the luckiest people ever. I was so blessed to have this chance to do this series. I'd seen all the great films. The minute I read this script for Moonlighting, I thought this was something I absolutely have to do. I met with Glenn and Jay Daniel, and we hit it off great from the very beginning. And I'm just thrilled that I had the chance to do it. I'm thrilled that it's on again.
Well, we're thrilled that you did it. You're so great in the show. We're huge fans. We love Maddie Hayes. We love David Addison. We love the show. And yeah, thank you so much for everything you put into it.
Thank you. Thank you both.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate your time. Can I just say, you just still look so beautiful.
Oh, you're so kind. There I am trying to get my hair right.
I just love your hair today. It's beautiful.
It's really cute.
Yeah, I washed it and kept it up on my head all night long. So when I let it down, it'd be a little crazy like me. Well, thank you so much. It was an honor for me. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Sybil.
Thanks, Sybil. Enjoy the book.
I will. I can't wait to get it.
Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Have a fabulous day.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Love you.
Oh, we love you too, Sybil.
Thank you so much.
Well, until next time.
I'm Grace.
And I'm Shauna.
Thank you for listening to Moonlighting the Podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even on a budget, Quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.